kind of looking at the independence for non-Cartesian variables is to look at the ratio. Two subalgebras are called independent if the tau of the product of elements coming from two different subalgebras is just the product of the taus. Or we can have another way to look at this, which is called freeness. So I'm looking at the family of unitary subalgebras of n tau, and this family is called free if this condition holds. So tau of the product of n elements from the subalgebras is zero whenever tau of each element is zero, and then what I want is that the neighboring elements in my product come from different algebras. Okay, and this is for the subalgebras. This definition, it can be thought of again as definition for the variables. Basically, we're going to look at the subalgebras generated by our variables in question, random variables in question. And remark, it is easy to show that if I have three random variables, they're also independent. So that's how the implication goes. Okay. So I need to introduce some definitions. Okay. This is connected with the fact that the main, results in the classical probability are shown almost surely. And so we don't have it for all events in this situation. So we also have some kind of a corresponding notion in non-commutative setting. And if I have a sequence of random variables xn on n tau, and I say that it converges to x, some variable in n, almost uniformly, that's a notation, AU, if for n epsilon we can find a projection in my algebra n such that tau of 1 minus e is small, so less than epsilon, and then this difference times the projection in infinity in norm goes to zero. And it turns out that it's often not enough in trying to prove what I want to prove. And we need to use something stronger, which is bilaterally almost uniformly. And this basically means that we take this projection and have it on both sides of our differences. Okay, and along this line, we can define what does it mean for a sequence to be almost uniformly bounded by some positive constant. But if you would like to have the Lim sub of xn times e less or equal than this constant plus some delta, this is called for any delta. And again, what I'm going to use is to have this projection on both sides. This is going to need stronger condition. Okay, so there's some things that have been done in this setting. So we have non-commutative strong law of large numbers by Yaita, and basically all we need were independent identically distributed random variables on some threshold probability space and tau, and we can show that this sequence of sum of n variables over n goes bilaterally almost uniformly to zero. What we also have is a free central limit theorem. It's a bit more general setting. I have three random variables on some general probability space AFE such that they have mean zero. They have bounded all the moments uniformly, and we have a third condition on the second moment. And then the sequence here, the sequence goes in the distribution to the semicircular law, which is given here. Basically, so for any polynomial, this is the formula for the distribution. And since this is the limiting distribution in our central limit theorem, these variables of this distribution are just called free Gaussian variables of free Gaussian distribution. And so My question is, when we find the updated logarithm for the non-commutative random variables, and what's going to be the AN in this situation? I mean, can we hope to get the same normalization as in the classical case? The first thing is the free case, okay, so we have the law of Witter's logarithm in the free setup. What I need is a sequence of free self-adjoint random variables with mean zero, and I need this condition of being uniformly bounded in distribution by some random variable, and this is the definition of what does it mean to be bounded in distribution. Basically what it gives us the uniform bound on all the moments. So this is what it's, you know, here. What I need is the supremum of xi, the pth moment is just bounded by some constant depending on p by the p moment. I think I should explain what the p norm is, but it's going to happen a bit later. And so in this situation, this is the lean sup of 1 over square root of n, so the same as in a classical case of the sum of xi is less or equal. And this is, again, bow, so basically almost uniformly less than 2 sigma. Okay, so in this situation, this is a different, slightly different constant. It's not just sigma, it's just 2 sigma. Okay, and this is the example, and I'm really sorry. Since it's the last day, I managed to get sick. So what we have here, okay, so we consider 3 Gaussian variables, and we look basically at their sum. And if you look at the distribution of the sum divided by the square root of n, this is again, we get the semicircular distribution with the same parameter 0, 2. And so basically, if we look at the lean sup of our sum, inf norm, this is looking like the inf norm of a single variable from a semicircular distribution, and so this is 2, okay? In our situation, sigma was 1, so we actually got 2 sigma exactly, and so it seems that it's going to be the best constant we can get in this situation. And for this result, I have to give credit to Voiculescu, and this is his version of one version of his inequality that I'm basically using to prove this result. So just have a control over the inf norm of the sum of xi by the sum of the inf norm of individual random variables, and then also the second moment. So it was the free case, and we'd like to now say the question, so what if we have just generally independent random variables? And when we go to the classical proofs, basically, the main tool which is there is that if I have e to a plus b, then I can say, okay, this is e to a times e to b, and that's where the proof actually goes along. In the situation that we are working here, where the variables are non-commutative, we basically don't have this, and we cannot use the fact that we have this, so we have to kind of go around. So one of the results here is, okay, how to handle this case. And this is anti-commuting relation. Basically, I have then self-adjoint random variables, independent in the general sense, and we assume that xi times xj equals some epsilon ij times xj xi, and this absolute value of xij is just 1. And then this is the bound that I can find for tau of e to the sum of these random variables, and again depends on the first moment here, the second moment, and then infinity norm. And so gonna look much easier if we take mean zero variables, okay, again uniformly bounded in distribution, then we actually can get our classical result. So here it's an is just the square root of n log log n. I'm gonna use L of n, it's just simpler looking. And sum of xi is less or equal and square root of 2 times sigma. Okay. So in the classical case, the square root pops up here. So I'm gonna get numbers on this side, but it is basically the same as the classical case. Okay. So now looking at the most general case, I do not assume anything special about unknown variables, just that they mean zero. A uniformly bounded in distribution by random variable y with finite second moment, then we get here the law of dated logarithm. So an in this case, this is just the square root of n, and then times the log log of n. And then our constant is 2 times c, which is some absolute constant. This is the e, the base of the natural log, and our sigma coming from the variable y. And so I'm going to talk a bit about the proof and also explain where this second condition is coming. No, I don't take them. No, that's the difference. Okay. So here about the proof. The main tool is symbolic and Tully type argument. So I'm just gonna review here. If I have, this is the classical case, if I have events, probabilities of which are summable, then I can claim the probability of Rim soup of this event is zero. And I'm gonna use it in a special case. I basically look at some random variables and looking for the supremum being larger than some number, in this case just one, to fix it, and then I can find the Rim soup of the sequence is almost surely less than 1. And why am I doing this with the holes is because what I want to do, I would like to have my version of Boyer-Cantelli, and it works. Okay, so almost. And so, yeah. So basically what I would like to have, I have non-commutative self-adjoint random variables, and I would like to have some prop C. This is just some index here, C, that I'm going to explain in a moment. And I would like this to be summable, and then I can claim something about the Lim soup of my sequence. So I'm going to put it on here. Yeah. So what's going on? Basically, I'm going to introduce new notation. So it looks kind of very much like probability. So this is my new notation. So prop C of a soup of norm of x n is greater or equal than t. That means that this is the smallest number s, so such that we can find a projection e such as tau of 1 minus u is less than s. And then for each random variable, I can bound the infinity norm of x n times e by t. And these are some kind of easy facts about this notation, but in a way they resemble very much the classical probability. And this is kind of the way that I think about it. And so, okay. So I have this Boyer-Cantelli tool, and then of what's going on. So I'm looking at the variables and I want to split it into kind of unbounded and bounded parts. In this situation, my unbounded part is the xi prime. So this is the bounded part, I'm sorry. And what I would like to do also to have trace zero on this bounded part. So basically I have to subtract this trace, and then zi's are, this is the unbounded part. And
What we do, we need to show that somehow the scales go to zero, and so the power of xi prime is just the numbers. So this is done just using calculus and Kronecker's lemma. And the situation when we have zi's, it's a bit more complex, and there are also Kronecker's lemma useful, but again, I have to kind of change it into some non-commutative version of that. And then what's going on with the y's, well, basically we would like to block them using some good subsequence and bound this probability c by some number that the series is convergent, and then I can use the Sabori-Cantelli lemma. Okay, to get this bound here, there are three main things to use. So this is Trebyshev inequality using this notation prop c, okay, and using the LP L infinity c norm, which is here given, and this is this, looking at the infimum over all the compositions of xn into yn and b. Okay, here's the xp norm, and next thing is to use the non-commutative version of Dubb's maximal inequality, and so this works with these decompositions, and I can find a bound on the peak norm of this B, the decomposition by the peak norm of X itself, and then deal with the peak norm of X using the John Nirenberg theorem, also non-commutative version of, and calculating basically directly the BMO norm of X. Okay, and this is the C constant that was coming out in the statement of the theorem. So that's where the C constant is coming from, basically. It's the BMO constant. Okay. Yes, it's...
Mm-hmm. It would just be on the right.
Yeah. It's a corollary to the main result from the end of the. Yeah. Okay. So I can generalize a bit more and think about having a subalgebra on my tracial probability space and having a sequence of variables. And we'll have this, have two variables, basically, from n being independent over the subalgebra m, if I can split somehow the product. So em of ab is the product of the conditional expectations over m. And here's the first lemma. So this is the bound on the p norm of the sum of this of such variables, and okay, this is in the situation when these variables are not necessarily self-adjoint, so that's why I have xi, xi star, and xi star xi, and the statement is for the self-adjoint variables, so this simplifies, and we get the following. So basically, this is the same result as in the general case, with the same constants and the same normalizing sequence AN here. Okay. So. We have a moment. I would like just to mention, for the sake of completeness, from the kind of side of the probabilities, about what about martingales and Brownian motion. So we can, if the BS here in this situation, I'm just going to change notation, but the BS, I'm going to be random variables on the n tau, and I'm going to create increasing sequence of phonemes of algebras and P, and we assume that there are conditional expectations from N to each subalgebra and P, and then we have non-commutative inversion of what it is for BT, sequence BT to the martingale, which is corresponding to the classical case, so ES of BT is just BS, okay? And we say that this sequence is continuous path if on any interval, so for any T here greater than zero, can find projection such that this map T to BT times E is continuous with respect to infinity norm. And this is needed to get hold on the some kind of LP norm for the BT. Okay, and so then if I have a sequence of random variables satisfying these three conditions, that the sequence, this is the martingales, BT squared minus T is a martingale, and also BT has continuous path, and this, if I read this only for, say, classical random variables, that's the Levy characterization of the Brownian motion, so I can think about this as having the same situation here, and having these three conditions characterized by non-commutative Brownian motion, then BT over the square root of T log log T is almost uniformly bounded by square root of 2. And the same holds here when we take T going to 0. Okay. And this is the same result as the classical case, the law of dated logarithm for the Brownian motion in this. And one of such variables are the Key-Delphin random variables, would satisfy these conditions here. And so, and I'll stop here. Thank you. I mean, I didn't hear the beginning of the question, I'm sorry. On a moment, don't mm-hmm.
Like this, and it implies that you have to continue to pass. I wonder, I mean, that formulate the same kind of condition in the logic, I wonder whether this...
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Question is showing the product, which is of course to get lower bound each of time because we have that low concrete force. I presume this is difficult.
I mean, this is something the best we can get, this is also the classical case, right? I mean, that's what the result is in the classical case. And
the classical case is equals to the
two. Yes, yeah. So what's the question?
Well, greater or equal than square root of 2 is the question. Yeah, but in that situation, identification is a difference.
Oh, so you'd like to see the example where it's exactly square root of 2 in this situation?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm sorry to say.